Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special operations military news and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of Soft Rep Radio. I am your host, Rad, and I have a very special guest with me. But first, as I must mention, we have a merch store, softrep.com. Go check out the merch store. Go pick up some cool gadgets. We got torches on there with 2,000 lumens, which is a flashlight. We've got like first aid kits, all sorts of shirts. Go check it out. And I also want to recommend our book club, which is softrep.com/book-club. Go check that out, read a book, gain some mental knowledge, and then let's talk about it somewhere on the internet, okay? But without further ado, I have Dean Stott, former SBS, which is Special Boat Service, not to be confused with Special Air Service.
Yeah, that's right. That is correct. Yeah, right? Very correct. Yeah.
But also, extreme athlete, father, husband, someone who misses his family when he has to deploy and has to write letters or thinks about them. You know, this is somebody who's living a life among us, probably teaches soccer to his kids and next to your kids. You know, these are folks that just go above and beyond the athletic spectrum, right? Extreme athletes like Olympians. And Dean, you fall into that. I know you know that.
Yeah. Purely by accident. Yeah. But it was. Yeah. It's true. Yeah.
It is true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things that I've investigated, you know, through getting ready to talk with you is that you did a 14,000 mile trek all the way to Alaska from Timbuktu. Holy cow.
Yeah, the southern tip of Argentina to northern Alaska. It's the world's longest road. Runs, as you touched on, 14,000 miles or 22,000 kilometers, depending where your listeners come from. But yeah, it was a world record attempt, and I'd never cycled more than 20 miles before I applied for the world record. And so just sort of decided, you know, I wanted to test myself. I always wanted to do a world record, and you know, as a young boy, I used to read the Guinness Book of Records. But unfortunately, I had a parachute injury, which shortened my career in the Special Boat Service. I did 16 years and had to leave. And so the world record had to be a challenge, or it had to be a sport that wasn't going to be hampering my knee.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, my wife then found the world's longest road I'd only cycled 20 miles. At the age of 40, I applied for the world record. And 6 weeks later, Guinness said, yes, you've been successful on your application.
What year was that you went through with that?
So that was, I applied for the world record in 2016, and I set off, it was 1st of February 2018, so only 5 years ago from now.
So congratulations on getting that world record achievement. It's not like you're just stacking pennies in a minute. Okay. Yeah. Like who can stack the most pennies in a minute? You know, it's like you're putting your body, you're like you're saying, I just want to make sure I'm not going to hamper my knee, right? Everything else seems to be good on you. You know, funny, you said you were jumping out of an airplane when that happened.
Yeah.
My dad being a former SF guy, Green Beret, they dropped him on a night jump out here in Utah, but his whole team got hurt when they were above the mountain, but it was a night jump and they couldn't see the mountain below them, but the elevation was at static line.
Yeah, so it dropped the elevation.
Yeah, so it dropped him on the mountain in a pelvises, broken things. My dad got head injuries, you know, a whole team just in training.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, we did, you know, I was very fortunate when I joined the SBS. It was the busiest time in UK SF history. You know, we're at SAS, we're in Iraq, the SBS, we're in Afghanistan, we're rescuing hostages off the east coast of Africa. So we're doing a lot in a short period of time, which guys before us have probably been waiting 10, 15, 20 years in their career to do. So I was fortunate to do the first ever operational jump for the SBS, and that was in Afghanistan. And so I can relate to what your father was saying there, is that actually because of the high grounds, you know, offsetting the altitude. And there was a couple of occasions, where, you know, we had it slightly wrong and thought we had still 2,500, 3,000 feet. And then next thing we've connected with the side of the hill. But it's part and parcel of jumping at altitude, especially if you're at different altitude from the DZ.
Or at nighttime, which is a night jump.
Nighttime, everything we do is at nighttime.
Right.
You know, they call us green eyes because that's all they
right.
see. Yeah.
Yeah, because you got your nods, you got your night vision, huh?
You got your night vision on, and that's it. That's all the Taliban knows as is green eyes, because the only time he operates at night. Yeah,
that's intense.
We actually pick it up on their ICOM chatter when you know that they're talking about green eyes. The refs,
so they can pick it up. They've got something that's picking up your green eyes. They've got night vision. They're probably picking up night vision, IR. That's
not so much they had it, but you know they can. You know, close up, they see, that's all they can see.
Yeah, around the skull right here.
Yeah, it's just around the base, you know. So we're kicking indoors, that's all they reference us to.
Oh,
so
I see.
They don't reference us to a specific unit, they just say green eyes.
Yeah, because the light from the night vision is on the skull sock of the eye sockets.
Yeah.
I got you. Exactly. Same with thermals, they do the same thing. So we do war games here in Utah, and we hunt guys that, and my guy's got thermals, and I like to hunt him because when you get a predator like that, like, you know, the thermal guy, if there's just something that you put in the notch of your gun right there, it's like, I'm going to notch that.
Yeah.
But he's so sucked into tunnel vision because he's so using that technology. You know, it's just like, you know, all of a sudden you forget some senses around you. But if you're not using it, you'll see that glowing eye socket. It is true.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And technology's advanced so much over the years. I remember picking up my first thermal imager back in 1999 in Egypt on an exercise, and this thing had a gas bottle the size of my chest, which we had to, you know, twist on, and then, you know, almost had to start this thing up. It was making a noise, and now you get these handheld FLIRs and, you know, depth perception now on the MVGs. You know, it's so different from when the first generation. I'm currently, we'll probably share a bit later, but I can't go into too much detail, but I'm currently doing a episode documentary on the special forces with one of the biggest broadcasters in the world. Well, that's one thing that's really stood out to me as we've been visiting these units is the evolution of equipment, you know, how equipment has changed so much from when I was in, you know, first generation plate carriers, which, you know, is probably the weight of this table. So like now these things, I don't even know.
Like a 300 denier nylon. It's like 300. It's not even 500. Yeah. It's not even 1,000 Cordura. It's like, you know, these different weights because guys like you are carrying such a load that are moving through a lot of, you know, terrain and having to get from point A to point B. The lighter the load, the better the movement on your body. So now it's like laser cut molly inside of all of the vests.
Yeah,
they're taking
yeah.
off the webbing. The webbing's gone now.
Yeah.
It's one less thing.
One of the nations we went to, I can't really go into detail, but they had the old style jungle webbing I was used to on my selection. And then my two co-hosts were there with all the modern stuff. Yeah. And I said, no, I'm using the old stuff again. Just one last
nothing
dance,
like some Alice gear harness on your body. It moves with you. You know, it just does, right? Ammo on this side. It does. It really does. Exactly. That's awesome. And so, you know, we talk so cordially, but you are super, super famous for, you know, doing your shows, right? You want to tell me a little bit about the shows that you can talk about?
Yeah. So actually, I don't know if I'm more famous for the shows. How I sort of came into becoming a public figure, where it started, as we touched on, I had that parachuting accident after 16 years. And so, unfortunately, I had to leave the special forces. I never had any aspirations of leaving the military at all. I was a lifer. I was going to go on to my 22. I was going to get commissioned and I was going to stay until they kicked me out, basically. I didn't want to be a civilian. But unfortunately, the parachute accident, you know, changes the course and direction of your life. And so I ended up, you know, leaving the military after 16 years. All I'd ever known from the age of 17 to now 33, coming on 34, was that military environment. As with you, my father was in the military. My grandparents were in the military. I grew up, as it, we call them, a PADS brat, or like a military brat. You know, military brat. Yeah, we call them PADS brat. And, you know, because a PAD is your home. Your homes are called PADS. So that's what it was, PADS brat. And so that's all I ever really knew. And then, you know, change of direction, met my wife. My wife and I were together anyway, and she's very entrepreneurial and philanthropic.
Book writer too, right? Author, I think.
Yeah, she's an author now as well. Yeah, but she, you know, when you're in the military will protect you. You know, they provide, you know, the heating, the accommodation, everything else. You know, they take all those distractions away from you so you can focus on the job that you need to be doing. And so I was worried about entering this alien environment, which was a civilian environment for me. But my wife, you know, took those distractions away from me. And without sounding like Liam Neeson, people with our skill sets naturally go on to the private security sector. And so my screen's frozen. I don't know.
No, I'm still moving. I see you just fine.
Okay,
no, it's fine.
You see me? Okay, cool. Yeah. So I get good to go. So people with our skill sets naturally go on to the security industry. Okay. And so within 48 hours, I was out in Libya during the Arab Spring, helping set up the British Embassy in Benghazi. But I soon identified that a lot of the big security companies were charging 6-7-figure sums for crisis management, evacuation plans, stuff that's not in place. And as we've seen more recently in Afghanistan, they still haven't sorted themselves out, but still selling a service. And so I bought 30 weapons on the black market and I buried them between Tunis and Egypt and designed my own evacuation plans and sold them to the oil. So I was starting to then get a reputation within the security industry. You know, I was learning in a short period of time the whole about the security sector. You know, when I tell people I'm in the security industry, they think you're, because of the way you look and the build you are, you're a doorman from the local nightclub. You know, it's everything from surveillance, close protection, coaching, mentoring, you know, geopolitical analysis. There's so much in that arena. And I was learning a lot quickly. I just finished the London Olympics in 2012 when your American, and I was in Benghazi the evening your American ambassador got
Chris
killed.
Stevens.
They made a movie called 13 Hours. So I was in the city that evening and I single-handedly got a German oil company from Benghazi back to Tripoli through safe houses that I had. So I'd proven the concept of my evacuation plan. And then 2 years later, I'm at the Brazil World Cup, again, another big sporting event, and enjoying, you know, doing security, but enjoying the environment. And then I get a phone call from the Canadian embassy in Libya telling me that it's now the Tripoli War, which is a civil war between the militias and the government. And all the embassies had shut shop and gone, all the security companies had left, and they were stuck behind. But they'd know that I had a reputation to help people in these situations. So I went back in and I single-handedly evacuated the Canadian embassy out of Libya on my own, 18 military and 4 diplomats, And so when I came back from that trip, that's when my wife highlighted to me that I'd only been home 21 days in a 365-day period. And this is 5 years from my injury. And so I was trying to match the adrenaline rush I had when I was in the Special Forces without coming to terms with the fact that I'd left. And so something needed to change. And so at this point, I'm still very much under the radar. You know, people don't really know of me outside the SF community. It was then that I decided I was going to do the bike ride. But before that, I had been approached by TV crews, said, look, we've heard about you. You know, we're doing this show called SAS, Who Dares right. Wins. Do you, you know, we want you to be the chief instructor. But for me, I was always conscious of maintaining my reputation within the group. You know, I didn't, you know, it was very new, this world of media.
Yeah,
I didn't
want to be. All of a sudden, it's just like you had a switch that hit you and said, you know, I don't mind telling my story, because you go from.
No, so I, yeah, so I did to, it in a different, yeah. So I turned down that opportunity. I actually, one of my friends who just come out of prison, was in the special forces, one of the other guys had post-traumatic stress, who couldn't work in the security industry. So they were really struggling for work. And I said, well, look, speak to these guys. You know, for me, I'm still smuggling people across borders. So it doesn't help when you're on TV or you're a public figure. They went on, that show then became a huge hit in the UK. You know, my wife says, oh, why did you turn it down? But for me, it was about maintaining that reputation within the group. But that's when I decided, you know, when I came back after the Canadian embassy, my wife's like, you know, you're taking too many risks. It needs to change. And so that's when we decided, you know, I would go work with her. But having heard my backstory, I wasn't, she was she was a property developer. And so I would go, I'd join her on these architects and planners meetings. And I just, she could see I was just bored. I had no interest like in what these guys
were doing. Choosing blinds and choosing, you know, door frames and flipping houses.
Yeah, put cocktail sticks in my eyes, you know what I mean? Just try to stay away. And then, so she said, look, you need to do something to keep yourself physically and mentally engaged. And that's when we then decided to do the bike ride. And then because of the bike ride, you know, Prince Harry and I are good friends, been good friends 15 years,
cool.
Did a JTAC course. Yeah, did a JTAC course together, did a lot of charity work. You know, I rang him up, told him about this bike ride I was doing. You know, we did it for one of his charities. We set a target of £1 million. The world record was 117
days. I was going to say, that's brilliant.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, so really we didn't do it for, you know, to expose ourselves. We did it so I wasn't taking risks and stuff, but also giving back to the community. But a year later, I smashed the world record by 17 days. I became the first man in history to do it under 100 days. But more impressively, my wife raised $1.3 million. So that's when your profile, then, that's when you then became exposed. But where it sat well with the SF community is the fact that they knew I could have gone the quick option and done TV and done it that way. But they actually said, well, you're actually representing the community in a good light, you know. The $1.3 million went to various mental health charities and stuff. And so we did it in a slower manner, rather than trying to grab any sort of fame and stuff like that. We did it, you know, I didn't look beyond the bike ride. I didn't see a career in guest speaking, a book, doing other TV. I did it because
you're focused,
you know, I needed
on
to
that. Myself. You put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the bike ride was a perfect challenge. You know, I'd never cycled before, but you know, I'd done a lot of stuff in the military. I'd done a lot in the private security sector. I literally took a military set of orders and put it on this challenge and just crossed out ammunition.
Right.
You know, because the military are great at planning projects like this. And so, and for me, the sort of character that I am, I can't just buy a bike and go join the local cycling club. It has to be.
Your full send is what we call it in the snowboard world, bro. It's like your full send. You just got to go full send. You know, it's like if you're going to do something, you're just not going to half ass it. You're just going to go all in. It's like if I got
all
a tattoo,
what's the biggest,
it'd be like
the
a whole back. It's not just like a little tattoo. I just gotta go like all in. It's like so that's that thought process. Or snowboarding for me, I'm just all in, you know.
Well,
hardcore,
all in.
It's true.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Thank you. From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
So, yeah, so that's how we ended up in this situation in becoming more of a public figure and doing other TV. Just purely was by accident through charity work. Yeah. And so I had a
pushing the human experience, you know, you're pushing the human element to 14,000 miles on a bike, you know, and you're doing it in under 17 days of the other traditional record. And now you own the record. There's something to be said about that. You know, just where was the biggest struggle to get through? Like, was anybody like, you can't cross this land. We're not going to let you. And you're like, you don't understand.
So I spoke to the previous record holders. When I started doing the research on this, you know, I wasn't a cyclist. I started buying cycling magazines and I was learning a lot from them, but I wasn't getting the information I needed for the challenge, you know. And the best people to speak to are those that have done it before you, you know, people who've been on the ground. So, you know, one of the reasons like the UK Special Forces is one of the best in the world is not because of the caliber of the guys or the training. It's because we're always learning. You know, anyone, you know, you have to always be learning. You're never an expert at everything. You know, that's why one of our ethos is the unrelenting pursuit of excellence. We're always pursuing that excellence. We never reach it. And so every time we used to come off the ground, whether it's on operations or training or whatever we do, and it's a great model or template for anyone in life or business. We had a thing called the hot debrief. And the hot debrief, you know, before we go clean our weapons, get showered, get fed, sit there with the ops officer while it's still fresh in our minds. And he'd ask us three questions, you know, what worked, what didn't work. And if we were to do that again, that operation, what would we do differently? So we're always learning from it. So I asked those three questions to the previous record holders and they all started in Alaska, finished in Argentina. You can get a vehicle all the way from Alaska to Argentina if you cross the Darien Gap, which is between Panama and Colombia. But all their issues are in South and Central America, languages, spares for the bike, bureaucracy. So being a military guy, I was like, well, why take a gamble with the second half of the challenge? Why would you not address those issues early and get them out of the way? And then once you're in America, you're home run. Yeah. So that's what I did. You know, one of the things I was quite proud of, just because everyone decided to go north-south, didn't mean it was the right way. And I went some south-north and planned it the other way around. But, you know, we had all sorts of issues. There were strong winds that, you know, I got food poisoning in Peru. I crashed my bike.
What happened with the food poisoning? You just kept pedaling?
Yeah. Well, actually, I met two guys when I was in Dubai. I looked at where I was cycling. The Atacama Desert in Chile is like the driest non-popular desert in the world. It was 47 degrees centigrade, like 120 plus Fahrenheit for a week with no shade. And so, you know, I've been very fortunate in the military. I've been to the jungle, the desert, the Arctic, you know, but I haven't done it on a push bike. And so I did want to take a risk on a challenge and find that actually you struggle at cycling at heat or at altitude or in the snow. And so I replicated those circumstances or those scenarios before I even went on the challenge. So I flew out to Dubai and did heat training out there to satisfy myself. And I met two gentlemen, Axel and Andreas. They had the South America world record as a pair. And they said, you will get food poisoning at some point, but know that you can still cycle with food poisoning. So I did. I got food poisoning in Peru. But fortunately for me, going from south to north, from a cycling perspective, was a good decision. I had a tailwind all the way through Peru. That's 2,500 kilometers of tailwind. So although I had food poisoning, it wasn't as laborious. It wasn't as hard, the cycling, because I had that wind behind me. So I was still doing 150 miles a day with food poisoning. You know, it still wasn't pleasant. I like to call Peru poo rather than Peru. But that was my experience.
Yeah, because you were just like pushing through it just to get through the ailment. Because, I mean, geez, how many days total was it? 99 days is what you were on that trek?
It was 99 days. Yeah, I took 10 days off the South America world record. And then I got into North America, Del Rio, on day 70. And I was 14 days ahead of the world record. And I'm like, perfect. You know, my wife's the campaign director. She was running. She got me the sponsorship. She fundraised. She took all those distractions away from me. So all I had to do was focus on the bike ride. And she rang me up. Literally, I had 5 missed calls when I got into Texas. And I don't know what it was getting into Texas, but it was just like a huge relief, a huge weight off the shoulders. It was almost like being on Escape and Evasion and getting to the war RV. I don't know whether it was because, you know, the language, everyone spoke the same language, the culinary options, you know, the food was probably, you know, I was more familiar with it, or the fact that having spoken
there's
to previous
bike shop
record
on the corner
holders,
with supplies, pretty much, even though there is no supplies in the world, we seem to have some still.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I had a support team with me with bikes anyway, or spare. But I think it was the fact that having spoken to previous record holders, all those issues
were behind you.
Behind me. So we're on the home run. And so it was like a huge relief. But that soon changed within an hour. I had 5 missed calls off my wife. And I'm like, oh, there's obviously something wrong with the children. And she rang me to tell me we'd be invited to Harry and Meghan's wedding. I said, that's nice. And she goes, no, you don't understand. You need to now be finished day 102. Oh. And so going into the phone call, I was 14 days ahead. I'm now 10 minutes later. I'm now a day behind. Oh. And so I had to, so all those efforts before me had to change. So that was probably one of the
hardest
things for me.
You're a homie. That's a homie right there. You're like, all right. You're like, that's a homie. That's friendship right there.
Is it?
I love that. Hmm. I love that you're friends with the prince or Harry with, and the family.
Harry, exactly.
You know, awesome. How awesome.
Yeah, so I had to change the way that I cycled. Yeah. I got to Lubbock in Texas, and we had 60 mile an hour winds and tornadoes. So I was grounded now for another 24 hours. So I was now 2 days behind. So there's an app on your phone called Windy TV, and it gives you the strength and directions of the winds forecasted every hour for the next 2 weeks. And so I just changed the plan. I just put pen to paper. I had to cycle 340 miles in the next 36 hours to miss the next weather window. And majority of my cycling was done at night because that's when the winds had subsided. So I just played chess with Mother Nature, found those
sounds
gaps
like
in
it.
Winds and just, and also use it to my advantage. I got to Cheyenne.
Oh, wow. Yeah. A lot of open space there.
Picked up a beautiful tailwind.
There is wind.
I did 270 miles in 11 hours with 10,000 feet of climbing, you know, so was also using it. So I had 17 days planned for North America originally. I cycled 11 and a half days. So, you know, the success of this challenge was the fact that, you know, the start point and your objective is always the same. It was just being reactive to the situation changes on the ground as they happened. Other people may have struggled and been like, you know, been a bit overwhelming. But for me, I'm used to that in the special forces. You get dropped into, and security, you get dropped into these situations and you don't know what the infrastructure is like. You don't know what you're going to expect, but you still have an objective and you do everything in your power to meet that objective.
Completed. You're great. Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com, C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
So, okay, let's just pick up what you meant. You brought it up. You brought up, you know, the wedding. And so the day is now what? And you've made it to Alaska.
So I made it to Alaska on day nine. I did it in sort of going back again slightly because there was another curveball as well. I was a week outside and I was in a town called Whitehorse and I was eating about five Everything, Big Mac meals. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was losing weight. I was losing weight. Day that I started to I finished, and my mate rang the two gentlemen I met in Dubai told me about this guy he's a professional cyclist. He does this as a living. He's got three world records, sponsored by all the big brands, Red Bull. He's about 26 years old, you know, he's in his prime, and he come out on social media and said that he was going to cycle the Pan American Highway and be the first man to do it under 100 days. And so for me, I was like, well, I can't. You know, I was well within my world record, and I thought, well, if I don't push on even harder and try to get in 100 days, you know, would I be able to live with myself? So I had to cycle for 22 hours in the last 30 hours in minus 18 in the snow in Prudhoe Bay to come in under that 100-day thing. So again, even to the very last day, the plan was changing, or the objective was changing. So it was a huge feat. Obviously, I achieved it under the 100 days. But more impressively, Alana raised $1.3 million for charity as well, which was huge. So hey, as you touched on, we then had to fly back. My wife and kids, I think they're the only kids ever to be at Prudhoe Bay because it's an oil rig. There's hotels up there. And so, I don't think you call them roughnecks.
Roughnecks
were on the...
Yep.
Yeah, they were on the flight from Anchorage to Prudhoe Bay and wondering why there's like an 18-month-old baby and six-year-old girl on there. Like,
what? They're programmers. And so it's a new generation.
Yeah, they haven't seen kids. Yeah, they've never seen kids before. So yeah, we left there, went via Anchorage and flew back to UK. And I got back to UK probably 2 days before the wedding. But as soon as I landed, the first day was 15 TV and radio interviews. The next day was 15 TV radio interviews just prior to the wedding. And him and I saw each other briefly as he came out the castle one day to see the public. He ran over and saw that I was there. I'd lost my weight. Yeah, I lost about 25 pounds in weight as well from the challenge. But what was really frustrating, not frustrating, it's I didn't really get time to, A, get used to being around my family again, you know, and started rebuild that bond with them and just spend time and really appreciate what we'd achieved as a family as well, me and Alana and the kids, to a huge high, the world's biggest event that was going on, you know, the world's cameras. And so, I mean, all the questions I had were, how are you feeling about the wedding? And then post-wedding was, you know, what did you eat? What did you drink? And I'm like, really? I've just smashed
this record. Yeah.
Two world records. I'm the first man in history and raised $1.3 million, but no one was interested. It was almost like the wedding had overshadowed what you'd done. So for me personally, being
all
selfish,
the way down to like what you ate. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, yeah. I would have loved to have had sort of had that time to take on board what I'd done before we hadn't had a huge high, you know, great for me and Alana. But again, at the wedding, I was still coming to terms with the fact that what I'd done and being around people again. And then all of a sudden you're immersed with the Beckhams, the Clooneys, the, you know, of the world in this same little room.
And you go from this, again, regimented lifestyle, right? Is when I started working out and boxing, I've just been going every day now. And then when I miss a day, it's like, I'm guilty of something.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, I should be there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're there. I'm not there. Why are they there? And I'm not there, but I have to take my kid to like back to school. So I had to step away, take care of the family. Right. Because that's what's important. That's what even put me off today was going back to my son's first day of high school here and walking him through his classes to make sure he knows where he's going. And I'm just like, I'm so glad I'm done with school on that level, but I'm always learning still, Dean. It's the same thing you say. You can't just stop. You can't just say, oh, I'm the teacher now. You have to always be the student. Like that's always learning, right? Just always what's up, what's down, and what would you do differently on the mission? You know, when I do my war games with my team here, we have those same things. We have a hot wash at the very end of every night game. We're like, how'd everybody do? Give us one up and one down. Well, my weapon wasn't cleaned and I could have done better. Okay. What went up? Well, the team performed well for me, you know, et cetera. So what's the one up and one down? And I think if we just, you know, you can do that in your daily life. You can one up and one down. What went good for me today? And what could I do differently? It's not just something that, you know, guys with a whiteboard in their office, a lot of special forces guys have a long whiteboard and they sit there and they write on this whiteboard all the way out for like 4 or 5 years of their lives. I've seen it. My dad did it. I know other SF guys that still have it who are out of the military, but it's like somewhere there's a whiteboard and they're proper planning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's all about that. I mean, and then just, yeah, proper planning. And also not a bit like my bike ride, you know, planning was key. You know, when I do guest speaking, I contradict myself because I talk about the importance of the planning and the planning that went into the beginning. But then also not being too upset when the plan has to change. You know, that is a plan. It's good to have a plan, but there needs to be flexibility in that plan as well.
Well, that's just like making a decisive decision in a situation where you're like, what do I do? And you're just like, well, I got to go right or left. You're going to deal with going left or you're going right. Whatever it is, you just got to make that decision.
Stick with your decision. Yeah.
And then fix it. We should have leaned right instead of left. Go, everybody lean.
Yeah, don't go right. I mean, just keep looking left. Just go right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, don't worry.
It's like, what's over there? Yeah, exactly. That's awesome, dude. And so, you know, as SBS, that's Special Boat Service. You came from the regiment though, right? Is that the Army regiment? Is that right?
No. So I came from the Army. I was in the engineers. I was a commando reconnaissance, so paratrooper and a commando. I was also a diver in the military. So I'd surfed since a young boy.
Was your beret?
Anything around
the maroon?
My beret was green beret. Yeah, it was green beret. Yeah, so same with the Royal Marines, Royal Marine Commando. It's the coveted green beret. And so I'd spent my time working with Royal Marines. I was an instructor on the commando course as well. But as you touched on, to go SBS, before I went, it was 100% Royal Marines. But SAS would take Marines, Army, Air Force, etc. But actually, the Marines were losing a lot of candidates to the SAS because they didn't like the diving. So they then decided to open up tri-service. So unlike here in the US, where you have Delta Force have their own selection process and DEVGRU, SEAL Team 6 have their own one. Ours is the same. SAS and SBS is exactly the same six-month selection. People don't know that. We don't have a separate one. So it's not as if like I'm going to SBS because it's harder or easier than the SS. It's the same.
You know, I've actually got a funny story about it. I've stood on the spot where the SBS was created at Fort Cumberland.
Yeah, that's really? Right.
Inside the room, I had a spot of tea just last year, as a matter of fact. And I got to go and check out a 17th century urinal. Okay, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
And I didn't realize what I was looking at first, you know. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, it's a 17th century urinal. And I said, oh, let me check this out. And I was like, yeah, it's where you piss, mate. And I was like, oh, urinal, right? He turned his headlight, head torch on, and I'm in there, and it's this 17th century stoned out pisser. Yeah, yeah. at Fort Cumberland, right? What a great. And then I also got a picture in with my buddy Big Phil, who took me to Fort Cumberland to go check this stuff out. In front of this Royal Marine statue that stands about 30 feet tall. It's out front of.
I had
a photo.
Oh, you're down in Portsmouth. Yeah, that's down in Portsmouth. Yeah,
Hampton
Portsmouth
area, right? Southampton?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, and Paul, SBS, we're to Portsmouth, Southampton, and then Paul. Yeah, it's all on the South Coast.
And then I learned that they used Fort Cumberland down there to trick the Luftwaffe during World War II to set up the boats out on the harbor as city lights. So when the Luftwaffe would fly back through bombing raids and they'd want to indiscriminately just drop their ordnance, they're dropping it in the sea.
By the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight, that's right.
And across the way is Normandy and Utah.
Not far. Not far at all.
And I stood there on those shores and I looked over like as if Napoleon was coming at me.
Much to disgust of my friends in the SAS, I went to the SBS and we started with 200, and then 6 months later, 8 pass, and I was one of those. And now 15% of the SBS come from the Army. So,
Right. So SBS, you're probably Ollie, right? Ollie Archerton. Ollie's SBS.
Yeah, Ollie. I didn't serve Ollie, and he was out when I went in. But him and I just did a show together in Australia, SAS Australia. So I know Ollie.
Yeah, I know. And Ollie did the Rumble where he boxed against the Navy SEAL.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I did see him. I don't think there was that much boxing coming from Ollie.
Oh. The guys that stepped in that ring are just good in my book.
Good. Cool. I did. Someone sent me a picture. But purely from post military.
On the same show though. No, it's just a small world. Small world. I'll get him on here.
I'll get him on here. Small community.
Hey. You know, you say there's a lot of family in your life, right? You're talking about the support system of your wife helping you transition from military to civilian to back to regrouping with the family and focusing on your, you know, transition. So, you know, big shout out to your wife. And doesn't she have a book out that we can mention?
Yeah. So my wife, actually, you talk about royalty. We've just been to Scotland. My wife's just been honored the MBE from King Charles. So we're in Scotland a month ago.
The badge, the MBE. That's
the badge. That's the MBE, the cross,
number one badge.
There's other ones. There's OBEs. Well,
like for civilian though, right?
For a civilian, member of the most excellent order of the British Empire. It sounds very archaic. Yeah. So she obviously did the fundraising for the bike ride, but she works a lot in modern slavery and human trafficking. So it was her services to that, which was good because, you know, everyone sort of sees me, but, you know, I always talk quite highly of her and what she's done and achieved. So for me, that was great. And the fact that, you know, she's been recognized for that. But yeah, she has a book. She has two books, actually. One's a business book, How to Ask for Money. And so as a non-cyclist, you can imagine trying to get sponsorship for a challenge like this. She got me £500,000 sponsorship as a non-cyclist and then raised $1.3 million. So the book's great, whether you're in non-profit or we're in business. She has her own formula being able to how to ask for money.
And it's just really the book is exactly what you want to do, how to ask for money. Sounds just like...
Yeah, well... She then started writing it because we were chatting with someone we worked in with wealth management and they said, I don't like talking about money or asking for money. I'm like, well, this is your job. He said, no, you know, it's in most people's top 10 fears. Yeah. So, okay. So she's that. I love asking for money. So she put that down and did her own book. And then she has her autobiography called She Who Dares.
She Who Dares.
Yeah, She Who Dares. So it tells about her life story as well. Mm-hmm. And then with my book, Relentless, you know, there's my side of the story. I mean, she'll be telling it from a partner's perspective.
Well, 100%. You know, like I was talking to you pre-show, you know, my mom and dad sit behind me on all these shows because they were the team, right? Dad was gone for 6 months. Mom was home doing a lot of what dad wanted to be doing. But when dad came home, mom was still running the show. You see?
And
you got to still like let mom and dad kind of like get back together.
It's hard. You know, a lot of people, because being in the Special Forces is quite selfish. It's quite selfish because you leave the family behind, expect them to carry on, you go do your stuff, and then you you walk back through the door and expect to pick off where you left off. It doesn't work like that. You know, there's a, you know, it's a lot of teamwork. It's a lot of effort. And, you know, a lot of guys, unfortunately, when they do finish their end of the career, realize actually them and their partners, not they don't love each other, just can't live with each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So there's, yeah, no, it's hard, but, yeah, you know, the wives are the unsung heroes.
Yeah, and I just want to give them a shout out, and that's exactly why I coiled her into my conversation with you, so you can smile just like that.
Yeah. 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 No,
so thanks to her for kicking your ass.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And she always, not challenges me, but she always, you know, it's quite funny. She goes, well, if you can't do it, you can't do it. And it's like fucking the red rag to the ball with me. It's like, okay, so she pushes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't do that. What? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been learning from a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger lately. I've been watching his documentary. He's like, you know, I just wanted to be Hercules. And so I said, what do I have to do to be Hercules on this movie cover? And boom, he really did push himself and manifest himself to be who he is. And that same thing.
True.
I'm just kind of stealing some of that same mental toughness of like, you know, I want to be, I'm 45 years old, almost 46. Into boxing.
Yeah, I'm 46.
I'm boxing though, and I like it, and I'm liking my shoulders, and I like how I'm feeling, and and I'm just, you know, I'm just focused on it. I just want to be a healthy person.
Good. No, brilliant. And I'm the same. I'm 46, coming on 47, and it's like just staying fit and, you know, being
active.
A good inspiration for the advocate. Yeah. You know, for me with the bike ride, you know, when Harry and I chatted and we did a promo video together, and then he introduced me to the Royal Foundation, they were like, you know, what is it you're trying to promote with this bike ride? So the money we raised went to 11 mental health charities, but not just veteran. It was postnatal depression, young children, teenagers, it was the whole sector. And they said, you know, what is it you're trying to promote? And I said, well, I hadn't really thought about it. And then after I said, well, physical activity helps your mental state. And they said, you can't use that. This is back in 2016. I said, well, why not? They said, it's not been scientifically proven. I said, well, look, I don't need a scientist to tell me that I feel good. So I ignored them anyway and carried on using it. And now it is recognized.
Now it's totally recognized. You know, here in the U.S. at the Veterans Administration, they're trying to use recreational therapy, but the patient has to ask for it. The veteran has to ask for it. It's not quite brought up, and they have to be like rated. You know, there's a certain up to 100% rating for U.S. military personnel.
Okay.
So if you're like a 40% rated, you may not qualify. But I'm just saying that if you're listening to this right now and you're going to the VA and you're getting doctor's appointments for psychological, they're trying to offer you benzos and pills, just ask them if there's recreational therapy available, which could be snowboarding or mountain biking. Mm-hmm. It can be getting out, surfing, you know, racquetball. Yeah, yeah. If you ever played racquetball, like hitting the ball, tennis, all of those things are recreational therapy, going for a hike. So you can try to get that through the VA here. I just want to put that out there to my listener. Cool. Yeah. Recreational therapy.
Good to know. That works for
me. Here's my internet doctorate degree for about 30 more seconds before it expires. You know, if we're going to follow the internet, just go outside, go for a walk. You know, it feels good. Yeah. We always sit around watching folks like Dean do the record breaker and be like, wow, what if I could do that? Well, what if? Why don't you go try?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that's
it. You know, chase it.
I always say to people, anticipation is worse than participation. People will tell you why they can't do it or think about why they can't do it. But actually, when you do take that leap or decide to do it, you then look back and realize it actually wasn't that bad.
And a lot of folks will sit there and watch others like work out. They'll see these inspirational things on their scrolls and they'll sit there and say, I need to. And then three years have gone by of I need to's.
True. And that's why I say when people speak to me about doing challenges, I said, you know, have you got a date yet? Oh, no, I haven't got a date. Put the date in and then it's real. Right. Tell people you're doing it, then it's real.
That's right.
Otherwise, it'll just keep moving to the right.
No, it's serious. It is. It's totally serious. You just got to keep moving, stay focused, show up to yourself.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and if you don't want to go somewhere and you feel people are going to stare at you or laugh at you, then you can just do it in the privacy of your own home. Just, you know, burpees.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do it. And you know, that was a great thing. One of the good things about COVID, there wasn't many, but that was one of the good things about COVID. People had to improvise. Yeah. You know, you can go to the gym, you know, just do it at home. You know what I mean?
I've got my COVID weights right here, dude.
Yeah. I never laugh at anyone who's doing any sort of training. I see people all shapes and sizes. And I'm like, well, at least they're doing it. You know what I mean? I'll never,
Because you've been doing it since you're 16, 17 to be in your physical shape, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. And the way I'm built, I've never used weights before. It's all body weight. Because when I was in the military, they test you on pull-ups, dips, press-ups, how fast you can run, you're climbing a rope. They don't test you on how much can you press or curl and things like that. And so for me, I would always train for what you were going to get tested on and did it that way and managed to get quite big through that. But also finding the balance that you needed to be able to still perform or fulfill your role. You know, so whether you're climbing the side of a ship at night on a caving ladder or whether you're climbing the rope on a helicopter to get out of the jungle. You know, I met some guys in Kosovo from one of the other nations, and they were like Hollywood. You know, they looked like Arnie.
Yeah.
You know, they looked the part, but actually were zero contribution to the team because they were too big. And so I was always conscious my training was geared around that body weight stuff, being able to fulfill your role.
How tall are you? Do you mind if I ask?
Yeah, I'm 5'11", 200 pounds.
Were you that tall when you joined the military?
No, actually, no. My father actually told me the last 2 minutes when I told him I was going to join the military. I was 5'7" and I weighed about 67 kilo. You know, I'm 5'11" now and 90 kilo.
Oh, wow.
But I still hadn't really fully formed. You know, I joined at the age of 17 and a half. I'm still growing.
Yeah, four more inches.
Yeah, exactly. But within about 18 months, I shot those 4 inches and I put on that weight. But I just grew physically, but more important, I grew mentally as well. The very first course I did my basic training, you know, for the engineers, was like 10 weeks. And then I got to the end of that and I was like, okay. And then the next was the combat engineering, which was 12 weeks. And combat engineering, there was a lot of bridge building, you know, a lot of heavy weights and stuff. So that was naturally building me up. But then I was like, okay. And then I did the all arms commando course. And then, so every time I then did a course, I was passing and I was like, I wasn't just passing. I was either becoming like top student or up in the top 5-10%. And so that then started giving me confidence to then see, well, what's next? I never had any aspirations of being special forces at all.
You just went one so step at a time.
It just went one step at a time. And literally I did every arduous course you did in the engineers. And the only course left was Tier 1 special forces.
Yeah, because that's the next level to go to because you'd already accomplished.
Yeah, I was already tier 2 special forces. So it was like, well, you know, tier 1 or don't. But, you know, there were some guys on my course who from a young age, like I'm talking 6, 7, all they ever wanted to be was SAS or SBS. And this was their moment. And a lot of them crumbled under pressure. And whereas I went in with an attitude of, I am good enough. But if I get in, I get in. If I don't, you know, it's not something that's been a long life ambition. And I think that's also, that helps with special forces soldiers. They don't take things too seriously.
Well, and a lot of folks realize that the Green Beret that you wear goes to the Green Berets over here. Wasn't that how it was given to, you know, the SF Green Beret over here, how we have the special forces?
Yeah, I don't really know the history of it, but I've heard of a story of that. Yeah, so, I mean, it's the same with your Delta Force, you know, your Colonel
Chuck Norris.
Colonel
Chuck Norris, Delta Force.
Chuck. He came over and spent 2 years with the SAS. And then in 1977, came back and set up Delta Force and did the selection process from ours. So, yeah, so there's a lot of origins that come from the UK.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the Green Beret for us in the UK, it's the only coveted beret in the whole of the UK Special Forces. So if you're attached to the SAS, you can get a Sandy Beret. Yeah. If you're attached to the parachute regiment, you'll get a Maroon Beret. If you're attached to the Free Commander Brigade, you only get the Green Beret if you've done the command.
Oh, so the Green Beret does have that significance.
It has that significance. It's the only coveted Green Beret. We have the Intelligence Corps who have a Green Beret, but it's more like a snotty green than a dark green. Yeah.
But you're the Beret.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
that one is.
Yeah, I mean, the SBS. And the SBS is that coveted green. So although I wasn't a Royal Marine, I'd done the commando course.
So you had that, that's legit. Yeah. I love that. You know I love that. You know I'm going to be just totally, you know.
Yeah.
Green Beret. Woo!
Yeah, cool. That's why we say it's coveted. And that's why the Marines and the commandos are so proud of their beret back in the UK.
Yeah, me too. I'm in your corner, bro. I think you're fabulous, and I'm glad we've had this opportunity to talk and just really, you know, pleasure. My listener just wants to hear you talk like this, you know, and say, what's up, bro? Now what's your shirt say? It says Staccato.
Oh, Staccato. It's an American pistol brand. They do a lot of law enforcement based in Texas. They're basically the Ferrari of the pistol.
I'm going to get totally wrung out for saying their name wrong, probably, being an American gun
Staccato,
guy.
Yeah, Staccato, yeah. Yeah, your listeners will know Staccato. So, yeah, I'm a brand ambassador for Staccato, Leopold, and 511.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, let's get them put out there for you, dude. Yeah. You should say that. Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Are you going to be going to Vegas in January?
The SHOT Show, yeah. I've been the last 2 years as a guest. I did my book signing at the SHOT Show last year with 5.
Well, if you're there on range day, I'll be there on range day. We'll have to at least shake hands and just say hi and get a proper photo.
No, definitely. I'll be there with Staccato.
Yeah, and I'll be there with Soft Rep.
Exactly. There we go.
No, that's wonderful.
I'd love to.
Yeah, and say have a spot of tea if you still do that, right? Of course, dude.
Yeah, I don't mind the tea now and then. I'm a coffee guy.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. You guys threw all the tea in the bay.
Yeah, but when I go over there, for some reason, everything's still... When I go over to England, I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah, really.
Because, I mean, I have that in my DNA. I have a lot of British in me that I didn't realize till I did this DNA stuff. And then Norwegian, so Norway. So I'm very...
Oh, that, wow. Yeah. But we... You know, we live in California now, and so we, we went back to UK. It was nice to go back. But, you know, we do love the American dream. We actually moved over right in the middle of COVID, October 20. Me and my wife were like, let's go. While the world was paused, we just came in and
You're lucky because it's crazy right now with the housing markets and everything. All, you know, you're over here.
Oh, yeah, it's everything's unstable, but you know, you sort of. You seize opportunity, you know, yes, the world, there was a crisis going on, but we just saw that as an opportunity and took advantage.
I stayed alive. Yeah. My shops stayed open. We didn't, you know, I was waiting for someone to say, you should close. I'm like, when do I get to go home for 30 days? When do I get off? No, they're your stores stay open because they're gun store, airsoft, war game stores. So it's like essential.
Wow.
Only in America.
Yeah. In America. Yeah, definitely.
Well, listen, do you want to plug your book for me? You have a book, right?
Yeah, I have a book called Relentless. It was launched in the UK originally. And when I came over to America, I went on Jocko Willink's podcast. People magazine were doing interviews with me. You know, it was like, you know, the stocks have arrived sort of thing. And my publishers were like, I'd sort of told them about these marketing opportunities, and they weren't really interested because it'd been 18 months since the book had come out. So my wife, being the entrepreneur and the philanthropist, you know, the book hadn't been launched in the US, so we bought the rights from our publisher for USA and Canada. And then we redesigned the book cover. You know, 5.11 did the book cover for us. But then we got influencers that the American audience would recognize. So Jocko, Admiral McRaven, Bear Grylls, because the ones that we had in UK, people weren't aware of. So we sort of gave it a lick of paint, as we would say, a new cover. Because the cover you have there with me holding the mini-me with all the ammunition around my neck, you know, you wouldn't get away with that in the UK.
No, you have to have a little bit of a different, more approach.
Yeah, a bit more different. And I mean, also people weren't buying the book. People weren't buying the book in the UK from the psychic community because it looked like a special forces book. So we watermarked the bike on the front cover of this one as well, because there's a huge community there of cyclists.
Well, it makes sense. Also,
and fitness it goes enthusiasts. Both ways.
You can almost have like a reflecting cover where it's like one of them is you as a cycle, and then when the sun hits it, it's like you with your gear, and you're just like, you can like pause it in the middle and get half of you on a bike with your gear. You know what I'm saying, right?
So So the book Relentless is almost like there's three main phases. There's my childhood in the military. I do stop on selection. You know, I don't go into the special forces stuff just purely because I'm trying to protect my brethren there. And then the private security stuff, you know, actually I did more sensitive jobs as a private security guy than I did in the special forces. You know, we touched on someone on here, you know, single-handedly evacuating embassies, but you know, there's other stories in there which are great. And then the final third is the bike ride. Everything I'd learned from the first two into the bike ride.
Well, Dean, I think that you're awesome, and I think you're fabulous, and all of those wonderful words that I could say. I'm happy that you guys wanted to come on the show and talk about life and, you know, and your book and just pushing forward and persevering. You know, we all have lived through COVID and we've all seen the world shut down, and it's time to just restart our engines and get going.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I look forward to seeing you at the
show. All right. Sounds like a plan. And so I'm going to let you go back to your busy day today, and I appreciate you for this last hour. And I just want to give a shout out again to Brandon Webb for having me as the ambassador for SoftRep and letting me do these podcasts. I've really appreciated the opportunity to talk to guys like Dean, and I really appreciate the SBS and the SAS and all the UK brethren over there that are our allies and all allies around the world. We thank you. So from me and on behalf of Dean, I'm saying peace from SoftRep Radio.
You've been listening to SoftRep Radio.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.